Thank you for joining us on History FM Radio on liveparanormal.com and history.fm. From paranormal to the unexplained history, it all happens here. Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in live interactive chat 24/7 with our radio show hosts and other like-minded people on www.liveparanormal.com, the only interactive social chat room supported by full interactive media. Stop by now and join in on the fun.
This is Exploring Mysteries, Histories, and the Paranormal with Dr. John. This is John DeSalvo, your guide for the next 60 minutes, and I want to thank you for being with us tonight. My special guest tonight is the well-known Area 51 and Roswell investigator, Dennis Balthaser. Dennis is a retired civil engineer and with over 30 years' experience as an engineer. He also served in a U.S. Army engineering battalion, and he was on the board of directors for the International UFO Museum. Dennis has done over 350 TV and radio appearances, including interviews on ABC, NBC, CNN, the Sci-Fi Channel, Discovery Channel, National Geographic, and the History Channel. Dennis is a certified UFO investigator with MUFON, and his main areas of research are the 1947 Roswell incident, Area 51, and secret underground bases. It is my pleasure to welcome my very good friend and colleague for over 10 years, Dennis Balthaser. Dennis, welcome to the program.
Hello, John. Good to be on.
Oh, I was so excited about having you on as a guest. During the week before I have a guest on, I usually like to jot down questions that come into my mind that I want to ask the guest. And when I got to tonight, I had about 5 pages of questions for
Uh-oh.
You. So we're going to have you back a couple hundred times.
I can't believe it's been 10 years and we have never met each other.
I know. Isn't it amazing the amount of research? And we probably have had hundreds of phone conversations.
Yeah.
And just the work that we've done together, it just shows how the modern technology and our society just allows us to have these incredible types of communications.
That's right.
But, you know, I threw out all the 5 questions, and the 5 pages of questions, and figured just I'll ask you what comes into mind. But the first and most important question, Dennis, I got to ask you, is the Ark of the Covenant really stored in some warehouse in Area 51, or have I just been watching too many Indiana Jones movies?
You've probably been watching too many movies. I tell you what I did find out, though, and it really surprised me. Several years ago, I got a phone call from a gentleman in Spain, I believe it was, and he knew that I had some interest in the pyramid research, and he told me that he believed that the original Ark of the Covenant was located inside the pyramid. And if you look at the coffer that was found by the Arabs when they went in the pyramids in 890 A.D., I believe the dimensions on that coffer are pretty close, if not exactly, the same dimensions as the Ark of the Covenant.
Yes.
Now, I did not get the guy's phone number, and I never heard from him again, so that's the end of my story as far as the Ark. I don't believe it would be at Area 51. I think it would probably be somewhere in the Mideast. Hopefully someday we'll know.
Yeah, no, I kind of just kidding because I know in the Indiana Jones movies, they show the Ark in a Area 51 warehouse. But I also think it's interesting with the measurements of the pyramids. There's just so many similarities between the basic unit of the pyramid and Solomon's Temple and the Ark of the Covenant. And it just goes on and on that there's
right.
some kind of, you know, standard type of measurement of the ancients. But, you know, talking about Area 51, and I know that's your specialty. I know you live in Roswell, New Mexico, and you're not that far from Area 51 in Nevada. Have you ever been out there? And, you know, we see these specials on TV where people go to Area 51 and they have all this incredible security. What's your experience of visiting Area 51?
Well, John, I read books and watched documentaries and seen pictures of Area 51 for years. And back in 2006, I was invited to do some lectures at Rachel, Nevada, the little town right next to the base, and drove out there. And it's a full day and a half drive, really. You go from Roswell up through Albuquerque, out west to Gallup, through Arizona to the Hoover Dam. And once you get to the Hoover Dam, you got Las Vegas. And then Area 51 is located 75 miles northwest of Las Vegas, Nevada. Many people think it's in New Mexico, but it's not. It's up in Nevada. But I had heard about these guards they have and the pickup trucks they drive and things like that. And my wife and I drove out to one of the gates, and it's about a 13-mile-long dirt road. And about 10 miles out, I told her I'd start watching the sand dunes because we'll probably see some guards here pretty soon. And sure enough, just as we got to the signs for the gate, the entrance, up on top of one of the sand dunes was a pickup truck and two guys sitting in there with camouflage uniforms on with binoculars watching us. And I'm sure by the time we had driven the 13 miles, they already had my license number and knew who I was or where I was from. They have the binoculars that they watch you with. They have listening devices where they can hear what you're talking. And that particular gate is the one that you normally see on television, which has the long road that goes out in the middle of the desert behind the hills. There's also another gate not far from Rachel, from the town, which has two drop-down gates and then a guard shack in between. And we also went out there, and it has a camera mounted on about a 30-foot-high pole. And I walked down along the boundary, and that camera followed me. If I stopped, the camera was on me. And after about three or four times, I just turned around and waved at the guards. It has to be a boring job to be sitting out there and waiting for somebody to come in. But the security at Area 51 is real. Reading books or watching documentaries doesn't compare to standing there at the signs that say the use of deadly force is authorized and know that you're being watched. It's an eerie feeling. For me, Area 51 is a catch-22 situation. I think we need a place to develop new aircraft and new technology. But if the rumors that we've heard over the years about possibly having aliens or craft there, I'd like to know about that also. However, you can't tell your friends anything without your enemies finding out, so Area 51 is a catch-22 for me, but it is definitely the highest security place I've ever encountered.
You know, with over 20 years of research into this area, Dennis, what's your opinion? Do you really, I mean, do you think there's UFO crafts that they're sequestered there? Are there alien bodies? What's your gut feeling on that?
Well, I'm probably one of the few that believes it, but I think the Roswell debris, and we didn't have a craft, we had pieces of a craft, that was originally taken to Wright Field, Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in Dayton, Ohio, back in 1947. And I think for security reasons, that it would be good to have it at Area 51 today because of the security. There are 22 levels below ground there at Area 51. And they just built a new hangar that is tremendous in size. They got new water tanks because I think most of the water is contaminated. They do above ground toxic waste disposal. And the President of the United States, starting with Clinton, every year issued a presidential determination exempting Area 51 from environmental laws. The only place in the United States that doesn't have to comply with the environmental laws, because they're burning this toxic waste above ground. There were two guys who worked there that died of radiation exposure. Their wives tried to sue the government. The judge wasn't even allowed to look at the paperwork. And the girls were told that you can't sue something that doesn't exist. And I'm sure they were financially taken care of, and we never heard any more about it. But there's no telling what takes place there. And like many other locations around the world, nearly everything has to be done either in a hangar or below ground due to satellites being able to read a newspaper from 200 miles up. Nothing can be secretly done above ground anymore. And it's just a really unique situation that they're at Area 51 in general.
Well, that's interesting. They're exempt from environmental constraints. I guess they don't have to recycle the garbage if you work there, I guess.
Yeah,
you know?
Right. But the interesting thing about that, John, is this was started by Clinton, and he did it every year while he was in office. George W. Bush did it every year while he was in office. I have not been able to find anything signed by Obama indicating that they're continuing this. So they have either discontinued the presidential determinations or is no longer made public.
Interesting. You know, Area 51, again, that, of all the different mysteries, that probably fascinates me the most, I guess just because it is so mysterious and it may hold some incredible answers to these things that we can't explain, like UFOs and aliens. But someone who seems to have the inside knowledge mentioned to me once that they thought there were many different species of alien beings and that there were several species that were in Area 51. I mean, not living, but, you know, deceased or bodies of alien beings. Do you know anything about, like, the number of species of alien beings? So I guess it might be rays and different types.
That's a tough question. There's years ago, we thought that there was probably five or six different species. Today, I wouldn't be surprised if there's 50 or 60. If you look at the Earth, which is pretty small compared to the universe, how many insects do we have, or how many animals do we have on this planet? And you go out into the universe with the possibility of all the places that could possibly have life, there's no limit to the number of different species that there could be. We do know about two sizes of grays that we've heard about, 4.5 foot and 6 foot. That's the popular one that you see in all the magazines and stuff with the slanted eyes, big heads, and things like that. You have the Nordics, which are blonde-headed and blue-eyed. You have reptilians, which have skin like a snake or a lizard. You got some that look like praying mantises. These are all descriptions of people who claim to have had experiences with these. I remember talking to Travis Walton from Fire in the Sky, who was abducted out in Arizona, and he described them as fairly humanoid-looking, and that's another species, humanoid. With little information we have, they could exist and be here right now, and we wouldn't know it because they could look like you and I, which, God forbid, they look like me. But, you know, that's a possibility.
Well, it could be worse. They could look like me, so I don't know. But, you know, that's so you know, we really never spoke about this before. It's very interesting because my sources told me there are around 40 or so different species, and that was kind of your guess. But that was a good point you made. Look at the number of species of insects and other types of
we're still finding animals and insects on this planet that nobody knew existed. And when you compare the size of the Earth with the universe, I mean, the odds are just too great that there's probably something out there somewhere.
No, that's true. Look in the waters and the oceans. We're finding new life forms. That's amazing. You know,
we probably know more about the moon than we do the ocean.
That's, you know, I wasn't sure I wanted to bring this up because we have so much to talk about, but I have to. I think this is one of the biggest mysteries about Area 51 is, maybe you can explain this. You know, Bob Lazar, who was a physicist who claimed that the government recruited him to work in Area 51 on a propulsion systems of crafts, and then he went public, and people are saying he never worked there. Some people are saying he did. Can you maybe briefly describe that and give me your take if you think he's legit or what the situation is with him?
I have no knowledge that Bob Lazar is legitimate. I know Stanton Friedman and I and several others have done some checking on his background, and he claimed to have degrees from MIT and Caltech. There's no record of any degrees from either one of them universities. None of the professors ever heard of a Bob Lazar. He did work at Los Alamos up in northern New Mexico, and I believe he worked for the Navy Department. His name was in the phone book. He may have been a maintenance man as far as I know, but didn't give a description of what he did, but he was there. as far as his propulsion system that he supposedly back engineered at Area 51, I talked to a physicist who said that his calculations don't go far enough to verify what he claims. He's also had a very, very skeptical and kind of undercover, I guess, background. He's been involved with brothels out in Nevada, and he's had different things that he's been involved with that were illegal. I just have a lot of problems with Bob Lazar and the stories that he tells. Now, he could be a plant put in place by the government to go public and then be denied, but I haven't heard anything about him lately. I know Knapp, who is with one of the TV stations, in George Knapp in Las Vegas.
Oh yeah,
done a lot of research and claims that he is the real thing. But we just haven't found the backing that we need to verify that.
Interesting. I didn't know Stanton's opinion on it. I'm glad. You know, I guess I have a different take. I don't maybe know as much information about him as you do. I did hear his name wasn't in a phone book in Area 51, which was interesting. But
no, I've never heard that. The only place I've ever heard that his name was in a phone book was at Los Alamos at the National Lab in New Mexico.
That, you know, maybe that's the story I heard, and I wishful thinking, I transposed it to Area 51. But, you know, from what I've seen of him, looking at what he said about the propulsion, to be honest with you, I felt he was legit. The thing that bothered me, though, why would the government bring in someone like that when they could get top PhD physicists from any probably major university in the country? And in a sense, he's kind of a relatively obscure physicist. It didn't make much sense to me unless they – see, one of my theories is that the government wants us to believe that they're covering up UFOs and alien visitations, because they're covering up something much, much bigger, maybe even more sinister, who knows. So they're trying to make us believe that by maybe the whole plan was to bring Bob Lazar in, and he was an honest guy, and they showed him these crafts and then knew he was going to speak. I don't know. What do you think of that possibility?
That's a good theory. But as far as, you know, the cover-up, the alien autopsy is a good example. That got a lot of exposure years ago and has been proven to be a hoax. And my thinking on the alien autopsy was that the government may have been involved and brought this forward, got it exposed, and then were able to make it disinformation. And that's the way they do that type thing. I had an experience in Oklahoma with a similar thing where I, for 12 years, believed that I had been used by United States Air Force Office of Special Investigation people. And after 12 years of research, it turned out to be a hoax. But at the time, it changed my life because I really believed that I was dealing with real people. So the government has a lot of experience in doing this type of thing. The atomic bomb was tested right here, developed and tested right here in New Mexico. 50,000 people were involved with the atomic bomb for a 10-year period that nobody knew anything about. The F-117 stealth aircraft, which was test flown at Area 51 like a lot of other airplanes, was on the drawing board in 1973. It became public in the Gulf War in 1991. So the government is good at keeping secrets.
You know, that's true. I remember hearing the Manhattan Project, how enormous it was.
Right.
And it was the best kept secret. That seems almost impossible. You know, once you tell three people a secret, the whole world knows about it. And here we've had thousands and thousands involved in this massive project. So I think you're right. The government, you know, knows how to keep secrets.
With the UFO thing, John, there's so many. Well, let me give you an example. As far as Roswell, there's some over 2,000 websites about Roswell. And I don't think the government has to do anything to cover it up. I think there's so many woo-woos in this field that, to me, are second, third-hand researchers. They've never been to Roswell, never interviewed a witness, don't know where the crash sites are, but yet they're authorities on Roswell. And I spent a lot of time on the Internet putting out fires from people who are putting out false information about Roswell. So, you know, we've reached a point now where the problem I see with our government is who in our government is going to admit they've lied to us for 64 years. First of all, if they do, that's going to open a can of worms for a lot of other things, because they're lying about a lot of other things besides just UFOs. And I don't look for this to go public or for disclosure probably in my lifetime.
Well, you're probably right. You know, it's interesting, too, because when we look back at Roswell 1947, the first was the weather balloon type of cover-up, you know. Then they came out with, I guess, Project Mogul, and they were using crash dummies. But, you know, as we've discussed, the crash dummies testing wasn't done until 5 years after Roswell. And you can't tell me that the government is going to make up a cover story and screw up on the date. That doesn't make any sense. They had to know that somebody was going to see that and say, oh, another cover up. But, you know, what do you think of that?
It's funny that you brought that up, because I just got a hold of a copy of the Air Force magazine, which is put out by Air Force Association in Virginia. The June 2011 issue has a four-page article entitled United States Air Force and UFOs. I just completed an editorial where I reviewed that article, and that will be on my website, truthseeker@roswell.com, by next week. I sent it to my webmaster, and she put some pictures on it, and we got the text complete. And in there, they talk about the Mogul balloon. They talk about the... They don't mention the crash test dummies, and the Mogul balloon was originally designed to keep track of the Russians to see if they were doing any nuclear testing. The Russians didn't do any nuclear testing till 1949, 2 years after the Roswell incident. And a lot of people were buying into the Mogul balloon theory, and the Air Force would have been much better off just staying by that story. But in 1997, they came out with another report about the crash test dummies, because they said the people had mentioned bodies and the Air Force had never addressed it. The problem with that is they said it was anthropomorphic crash test dummies, which weren't used till 1953, 6 years after the incident. So the Air Force shot themselves in the foot with that story. And if I live long enough, I'm sure they will have another excuse from the Air Force. Now, the reason I say that is my theory, and this is strictly my theory on Roswell, is that whatever we recovered, and we did not recover a craft, we recovered debris, pieces of a craft, and a few bodies. But it's my thinking that until our military gets the technology, the propulsion system, guidance system, and things like that, until they get that back engineered and know what they have so that the military can use it, I don't look for the military or the government to go public or to admit it ever happened.
Yeah, I think you're right. By the way, when you get that article up on your site, listeners, I've linked your site up to my site. The radio archive site is drjohnradio.com. That's drjohnradio.com, and that's... We have a listing of all our guests, their contact information, websites, et cetera. So people can go to that radio archive website and listen to past programs. They can write to you, Dennis. They could get your articles. And I really encourage them to go to your site. You have some wonderful information there. But
that editorial should be posted. I'll distribute it either Sunday or Monday coming up here. And it should be... It goes out to 31 websites and UFO magazine, plus it's on my own website, truthseeker@roswell.com. And I think it'd be worth people reading the article, because I don't have a whole lot of good things to say about the article.
Well, you know, again, they were off by 5 years with the crash dummy testing. They had to know that. It had to be intentional. So,
well, their excuse is that the witnesses had memory loss. That they didn't. That's what they said. The Air Force said that these witnesses that we talk about from Roswell all had a memory loss of some kind over a period of time. I met and I have talked to about 150 first and second hand witnesses to Roswell over the years, and I guarantee you that these people did not have memory loss. I know most of them, and knew of them. People like Jesse Marcel, Major Marcel, his dad, the top intelligence officer in the United States military in 47. His son, Jesse Jr., lives in Helena, Montana. He's a retired helicopter pilot and medical doctor, and he just got back from being in the Middle East again at the age of 69 or 70. These are American heroes. These are not just, you know, fly-by-night people. So the Air Force has got a big job ahead of them to try and explain how they've been lying for 64 years and why.
You know, that's true. And I know, you know, both of us, we know Jesse Marcel Jr. well. I know we've done radio shows together. Jesse is just incredible. He's a, you know, ear, nose, and throat specialist, like, as you mentioned, a fighter pilot from Iraq. What credibility. But, you know, and he's told us a story, Dennis, where his father, when he picked up the crash debris in Roswell in 1947 on the way to the base, that he passed his home, and Jesse Jr. was 11 years old at the time, and his father brought a box of the crash debris in and dumped it on their, I think it was the kitchen floor, if I'm not mistaken, and they were kind of sifting through it, and they both kind of said this was not of this world. I mean, that's one of the great stories that Jesse tells.
Yeah, Stanton was the first to interview Jesse Sr., Major Marcel. He retired in Yuma, Louisiana, and Stanton was doing a lecture down there and waiting around, and someone said, well, you need to call this guy. He said he's got some stories about UFOs. And that's when the research really started with Jesse Sr. And, you know, he was a top intelligence officer in the military at the time, so he knew the difference between a weather balloon and a flying saucer. And so did the rancher that found the material, because the balloons had a tag on them where to turn in the balloon and the equipment and get a small reward. And for a rancher back in 1947, that was quite a bit of money. So, you know, this has come about over a period of time, and the Marcels, to me, are some of the best witnesses we have.
They really are. And you know, we have to get Jesse on the program. Maybe you'd come on when he comes on, too, if we can get him on. Also, I want to get Bob Lazar on. I don't know if he's still doing interviews, but I would love to get his take on this. But, you know, I want to get your opinion, that I felt that the government wants the general public to believe that they're covering up alien visitations because they're covering up something more important. Now, are these UFOs and beings time travelers? Are they interdimensional creatures? Is it a spiritual realm? I'm not convinced it's alien beings. I think it could be any of the above, and maybe another 100 possibilities. What do you think about that, Dan?
Well, I don't have anything here that I can say. I don't have anything physical that I can say, yeah, it's definitely extraterrestrials from another planet. I can't do that. I don't have it. I agree with you that I think the government, the media, television, and documentaries, I know there have been several shows. Independence Day movie was very accurate as far as Area 51. However, the Air Force was supposed to be an advisor on that movie until they found out it was going to be about Area 51, and then they declined to be any part of it. The X-Files was a good show where information was released. And perhaps the government is doing this on a slow basis, trying to get the public educated as to what they're dealing with. But the dimensional thing and other theories are a possibility. But what I'm basing it on, based on my 15 years of doing the research, is the witnesses that I have talked to that I've actually seen bodies. And I'm talking about people who are very credible, who actually saw bodies that were recovered from the crash in Roswell.
You know, we're coming up to a half-hour break here. We're going to maybe at the last half hour when we get back after the break, Dennis, I'd like to find out an update on, remember a lot of the dirt was removed from the alleged Roswell crash site years ago, and they were going to do some testing on it to see if they could find any pieces. Mm-hmm. Maybe we could discuss that. And also, I want to find out what you know about the secret underground bases that we have all over the country. So if you can just hold on, we'll be back in a couple minutes. And you're listening live to Exploring Mysteries, Histories, and the Paranormal with Dr. John on history.fm and liveparanormal.com radio. We'll be back in a few short minutes, so please stay tuned, and we'll have more interesting stories from our guest, Dennis Balthaser.
Thank you for joining us on History FM Radio on liveparanormal.com and history.fm. From paranormal to the unexplained history, it all happens here. Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in live interactive chat 24/7 with our radio show hosts and other like-minded people on www.liveparanormal.com, the only interactive social chat room supported by full interactive media. Stop by now and join in on the fun.
Welcome back to Exploring Mysteries, Histories, and the Paranormal with Dr. John. We're talking to Dennis Balthaser, world expert on Roswell, Area 51, and underground bases. And, you know, Dennis, I guess I wanted to ask you, again, years ago, I remember seeing a special on TV, and tons of dirt, it seems like, were removed from the Roswell craft site, and they were going to kind of sift through them to see if there were any pieces that they could identify. And I was wondering, do you know any follow-up on that?
I was out at the site the last day that they did that. The University of New Mexico archaeological crew was there with several other researchers, and they did do some excavation of material. They took, I don't remember the quantity, I'm going to say 60-some bags of material. To my knowledge, nothing has ever been reported as being of any benefit coming out of any testing that's been done on that. The one thing that did get my attention was they had a backhoe and they dug a hole a couple of feet deep, and there was a definite difference in the strata of the earth a couple of feet down, which would have been the path that this thing took when it crashed and slid along the ground till it stopped. And I think that needs to be looked at it again. I've heard that they're going to go back and do some more testing. Just recently something came out where a guy from New Mexico Military Institute, he's a teacher here at the New Mexico Military Institute in Roswell, went out and found some pieces of metal, and he's having some isotopic testing done on them, but we haven't got results on that yet, but that's of interest. The material looks like it's different than anything anybody's ever seen. But as far as the actual dig that you're talking about, I don't know that anything ever came out of that that was worthwhile.
Wow. I just think there's a wonderful potential of finding something. So I hope, they eventually get to it. By the way, if you have any questions for Dennis, I should have gave this number out at the beginning, but I just got so excited, Dennis, about having you on and getting into the material. I forgot to give out the number. It's also on my website at drjohnradio.com. You can also email me with questions, which I'll try to monitor during the show. But the phone call-in number is 619-639-4606, and hopefully we'll have some time towards the end to get a few questions. Dennis, you want to tell us about the underground bases? I know that's one of your special areas of research.
Yeah, I got into that, I guess, probably because of my engineering background. 33 years with the Texas Highway Department in highway construction and building of highways and large structures, bridges. Well, I did about 80% of the out-of-state work for Texas, going to 34 states to look at material at the source. It included light poles, signs, guardrail, things like that. And I went to Korea in 1971 for structural steel for a bridge over Lake Austin in Texas. And I went to South Africa three times to inspect steel for a bridge over the Houston Ship Channel. So my interest, and I'd heard rumors about underground facilities, and of course I wanted to know how they were built, what kind of an equipment was used, and what the purpose of them was. And I got pretty heavily involved in the research. Apparently Black Project money is one of the largest expenditures our government has, and it appears, at least to me, that there's very little accountability required for such projects. And a lot of this stuff is done under Black Projects or National Security Research and Development. Those are all terms that the government uses to hide things. But they've been constructed for years, not only in the United States, but all over the world. The Koreans, the Chinese, the Vietnamese, the Russians, they all have underground facilities. And the reason for that is the fact that today satellites can read a newspaper from 200 miles up. So nothing can be done above ground anymore. And it either has to be done inside of a building, an enclosure, or underground. And that's got my interest. And the equipment, of course, the equipment has been available for many years for getting other materials such as diamonds, coal, salt, and many other common products. So the equipment is not anything new. What is new is the size of this equipment. One of my lectures, I show pictures of the different types of TBMs, tunnel boring machines, and I was able to obtain a drawing of a nuclear device that was developed at Los Alamos back in 1973, and this is a boring machine that goes through the earth, melts the rock and dirt, forces it into the wall, makes a glass-like lining as it travels through the earth, meaning that nothing has to be taken out or nothing has to be taken in. This thing forms its own tunnel as it goes.
Huh.
It's my opinion that most of the military bases, at least in the western United States, are interconnected underground through trams of some kind, and again, just for security reasons more than anything. What did get my attention, though, was the involvement that FEMA has in underground facilities. The Federal Emergency Management Agency is heavily involved in this. Starting years ago, with what they call the continuity of government, which was several locations that were set up in the event of a nuclear attack or some kind of a disruption in the United States. The White House has a room underneath it where Vice President Cheney went when we had the terrorist attack on 9/11. George Bush, president at the time, was in Louisiana, I believe, and flew to Nebraska and went underground at the Air Force Base in Nebraska. We have a location just across the Maryland line in Pennsylvania called Raven Rock. That's our military underground. In the event of an emergency, all the military people, high-ranking military people from the Pentagon would go there. There used to be a place called Greenbrier just outside of Washington, D.C., which was set up for the Congress. That's been exposed, so now it's a tourist attraction, and I haven't been able to locate where the new one is yet, but I'm sure there is a new one. So the underground facilities are fairly common. The FEMA has over 100 locations across the country, and they have computers that can get information about any American they want, so they probably know more about you and I than our mothers do.
Yeah, that'd be unfortunate. But you know, we mentioned underground bases. This maybe is a little more far out, but there's also theories that they're like maybe deep civilizations in the center of the earth or bases in Antarctica. Do you know anything about that?
I've heard those stories. I'm not into that. I just don't believe it. The Hopi Indians in Arizona claim to have come from in the earth and near Flagstaff, Arizona. The Hopis have a very deep feeling about their ancestors coming from within the earth. But they're the only ones that I've ever had any confidence in as far as living in the earth. I just don't buy it.
Yeah, it does sound kind of way out. It's a very enticing and romantic story that there could be a whole civilization.
Like Dulce, New Mexico. Dulce is supposed to be a location up in northern New Mexico that has at least seven levels underground, where biogenetic testing is taking place. You had the one up at Montauk in New England that I've heard that they use people who were mentally disturbed and things like that to do brain testing and do different things on them. All this is rumors. None of it has been really, really verified. And doing this type of research, you have to have backing. You have to have the credibility. You have to have the verification, because there's too many people waiting to jump on you if you don't have it. And to me, that's the big problem with most of this research, is that people will take things, particularly what's on the internet now, and believe whatever they see. Same with television and documentaries.
You know, that's true. I always say we have two extremes. We have the academic community that doesn't believe in anything that's not within their frame of reference. You have a lot of the alternative researchers that accept everything. We need to be in the middle. We need to be open, but yet look at it with a scientific method and be skeptical. But here's a question I have for you for the future, in a sense. You know, I've been interested in ufology since I was in high school, which was, be over 40 years or so. I'm giving away my age, too. But it seems like we're almost at a standstill. Nothing really more is gained. We have more sightings and these claims. I'm feeling that the most important discovery that needs to be done is we need something, a piece of either a craft or some really hard evidence that, or an implant that can be tested to show there's an element not of this world. What's your feeling? I mean, do you feel that there's been kind of not a lot of progress made in the last 10 or 20 years, and something new has to give way to open up this area?
Well, a lot of times at lectures, John, I'm asked, if they have visited here, why don't they communicate with us? And my simple answer is, why would they want to? What do we have to offer? You look at the technology we have today, which we have, last 50 years maybe, last 30 years, our technology has mushroomed. So if they can get here from wherever they're from, they are so far advanced of us, because we can't go there. I don't see where we have anything to offer to them, and I think maybe they're just keeping tabs on us to see that we don't self-destruct. We're the only species on the planet that can't get along with each other because of religion, because of color of skin, because of boundaries and things like that. So I don't see where we have anything to offer to extraterrestrials if, in fact, they're coming here. And I have reason to believe that they are not just coming here, but they have been coming here for many, many years. I have in my files and on an editorial I wrote pictures of artwork and tapestry from the 13th and 14th century that have what appear to be UFOs in them. So what were these artists seeing in the 13th and 14th century? This, to me, is much older than just Roswell. Roswell happened to be a crash, just like many other crashes that have been exposed over the years. 10 months after Roswell happened, there was one at Aztec, New Mexico, up in northern New Mexico, with a 99-foot craft intact with 13 bodies. Scott Ramsey and his wife Suzanne have done a tremendous amount of work on that one, and in fact have a book coming out at the end of this year about the Aztec crash. For years, I didn't put much confidence in it, but the more I work with Scott and Suzanne, the more I believe that it's an actual event that did happen. So, you know, we don't have anything physical in our possession. I think the government does have physical evidence, but like I said before, until they can figure out what they have and what the purpose of being here and things like that, I don't look for them to go public.
That's interesting. You know, I think we, both of us and others, we sometimes make an assumption which may not be correct. We think that an advanced civilization or technology would be more spiritual. That may not be the case. They may be more militaristically. You know, I mean, we just assume that maybe they're broadcasting our world on your planet as a reality show of a crazy civilization. I mean, so unfortunately, we really don't know what.
Well, you know, we tested the
be.
Atomic bomb in 1945, 100 miles south of Roswell. So if they were sitting out there wondering what are these clowns up to, we don't want this stuff out here in space. So they may have been watching us. Now, you brought up a subject that I don't bring up unless I hear about it, and that's the fact that I'm a Christian. And sometimes I'm questioned, how can you be a Christian and do UFO research? My thinking is if you believe God created everything. That's the end of the story. And nowhere in the Bible does it say that we're the only thing God created. I think you're limiting God if you look at the size of the universe, if you think we're the only thing there is. I can't be egotistical enough. In the first place, if we're all that God ever created, I think he screwed up. Because I think he could have done better than what he's done with us. But
no.
But I just cannot make myself believe that we're the only thing. And if you listen to scientists, they talk about the possibility of life, but they always say life as we know it. Well, where in the rule book does it have to be life as we know it? These extraterrestrials could crawl on their stomach and breathe sulfuric acid, for all I know. And, you know, the human mind is very limited. We're not the smartest people in the universe. I think it's Stan Friedman says that humans, intelligence-wise, are trying to get into the preschool of the universe.
Yeah, no, I think you're right, Dennis. We know very little. And also, you know, our concept of God is just small, because we use the word God. What is it? It's an infinity, the creation, the light,
mm-hmm.
who knows what. To me, the Big Bang could be a manifestation of the mind of God. So, yeah, I think you're right. There's just so many possibilities. One question I think people that may be listening, they say, you know, I saw a UFO, or if I see a UFO, what should I do? And I know you were with MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network, but do you have any advice? Somebody, you know, looks up, they really believe they see a UFO and they're not imagining it. Should they report it, and what procedure should they go through?
Yeah, two places. One is MUFON, Mutual UFO Network, and you can Google MUFON and find out how to do that. And the other one is a guy named Peter Davenport, who lives in Seattle. He has a UFO reporting center, and he has a database of people that call and report sightings to him or experiences to him. And if you see something, be sure to report it to Peter, because he can cross-check it to see if anyone else also saw it during the same time period, which would give confirmation to the sighting. So those two locations I would strongly recommend that you contact. And 90% of what people see, John, is explainable. It's either our own aircraft, it's balloons, it's planets, it's different things. But the other 10% is what we're interested in. And I think if people would report it, And probably 70% of sightings go unreported. People never do say anything about them. Mainly because when you say you've seen a UFO, people look at you kind of strange. They think you're different. And that's not fair, because my experience with people who have seen things is that they will remember that for the rest of their life. It makes an impact on them, and they can give you the detail years later of what they saw and what they experienced. So it's extremely important that this information gets documented.
Can you send me the links to MUFON and Peter Davenport? Maybe I'll put those under you as our guest in the archives, so it makes it easy. Somebody would just need to go to drjohnradio.com and have all that information, the links. Because I agree with you. I think this really needs to be documented. You know, we have only a couple minutes left. I know you're going to be featured in some upcoming TV appearances, and you're giving some talks somewhere. Maybe you can kind of update us and let us know what you have in store for the future.
I've got the History Channel coming here next Monday, and they're going to be doing a show. I believe it's Histories of UFOs in the United States, I think is the title of it. That may change. I don't have any idea when it'll air, but it'll be on the History Channel, and they contacted me, and they're going to be here Monday to film with me. And I've had a lot of problems with documentary people. National Geographic a couple of years ago was here in town, and I spent 6 hours taping with them and going all over southeast New Mexico with my vehicle, never got a thank you or anything else. When the show aired, the last thing the announcer said was that Roswell was a myth. And Stanton was on that show, Don Schmidt was on it, and myself. And Stanton and I both wrote to the National Geographic and said we hoped they enjoyed it because we'd never do another show with them. And most people think we get rich doing this when, in fact, we don't get any reimbursement at all. And the sad thing is that we have no input into the final product. We have a film crew here who probably don't know anything about UFOs to begin with. And they film, they ask some questions, and then they take it back to some editor in Los Angeles or New York who puts his own spin on it. And I'm convinced that the documentary producers are after two things. They're after ratings and profit. They could care less about factual information. So I've had some problems with some of these documentary people. I'm going to give the History Channel another shot this next week, see what happens. I've been asked to be the keynote speaker at the Kansas City Midwest UFO Conference August 27th. If you go to my website, truthseeker@roswell.com, I've got a link on there and information on that coming up conference in the end of August.
Wow. You know, what can I say, Dennis? This has just been an incredible pleasure for me to have you on as a guest tonight, being a good friend and colleague of yours and knowing all the things that you've been involved in. You got to come back sometime if you don't mind.
I'll be happy to. You better do it quickly because, John, you don't know about this, but I'm looking at this possibly being my last year to do research. I'm really frustrated with what's going on in the UFO field. At many of these conferences now, we have card readers and psychics and traumas and things like that intermixed with serious UFO researchers. And with an engineering background and 15, 20 years of doing this series research, that doesn't set well with me. Of course, the situation here in Roswell between the city and the UFO museum, the politics of a small town, there's just a lot of frustration involved. And,
sure.
I'm looking at the end of the year to make a decision on whether I continue it or not.
Well, I hope you. I'm happy for you. I'm sorry for the UFO field. But Dennis, I have to say goodbye to you and thank you again for spending the evening with us. I know everyone enjoyed it. And we'll give my best to your family, and we'll have you on again soon, Dennis. Take care, my friend.
Thank you.
I would like to thank my special guest, Dennis Balthaser, for being with us tonight. Make sure you tune in next week. I have geologist Scott Walter, who's going to be talking about the testing of the Kensington Runestone. And Scott was also involved in the evaluation of the fire damage of the concrete at the Pentagon following the attacks of September 11, 2011, 2001, an incredible researcher and geologist. And I'd like to thank LiveParanormal.com and History.fm for hosting this program. The owner, Rob, Carla at Master Control. I don't know what I would do without Carla. And ClassicalIndia.com for permission to use their wonderful music. But most especially you, the listeners, for joining us tonight. I hope you join us again next week for another special guest. And don't forget to check out all our listings and radio archives at drjohnradio.com. Until next week, good night, and may God be with you.